I realize that just like we often suggest prompts to you that might evoke new views, we also need prompts, and that we seem to get these prompts from other people's words and writings and views. Sometimes they're heard, sometimes they're read, but oftentimes also dictionary definition. So, but this time it's from a book I purchased called Dopamine Nation, which could be the title of the talk. And I purchased the book because I saw there were so many parallels in this book, even from, getting to read a look inside the cover. I saw there were many parallels to reflective meditation. In other words, several Dharma talks might be able to be mined from this book. So that's what I'm going to do today is riff off of this book. And this book, Dopamine Nation, is about pleasure, but it is also about pain, a line from the introduction. Now, back to my own words. A fundamental teaching in Buddhism is about pleasure and pain. And today we're mostly going to speak to the pleasure side of that equation. It turns out it is a bit of an equation. How we instinctually want what pleasures us and how desire can become addictive. That's a very basic Buddhist teaching. We want more. And that's what this book is about the myriad ways we could become seduced by all the avenues of pleasure, or as she puts it, dopamine that surround us. Back to the introduction to the book. Most importantly, the book is about the relationship between pleasure and pain and how understanding that relationship has become essential for a life well lived, which I might say is another word for what the secular Buddhists are saying, a life of flourishing. Back to this book. Why? Because we've transformed the world from a place of scarcity to a place of overwhelming abundance. Drugs, food, news, gambling, shopping, gaming, texting, sexting, Facebooking, Instagramming, YouTube, tweeting. The increased numbers, variety, and potency, and that's an important part of this, of highly rewarding stimuli today is staggering. The next sentence is a pretty evocative one. The smartphone is the modern day hypodermic needle, delivering digital dopamine 24/7 for a wired generation. If you haven't met your drug of choice yet, it's coming soon to a website near you. So anyway, that's kind of whatever. So back to the Dharma. What does that have to do with the Dharma? So it's really about the Buddhist teaching on greed and about how it is a poison, how greed becomes toxic. And that's really what this book is about. The more dopamine you have, the more you want. The more you want, the less pleasure you have from it, the less pleasure you actually have in your life, and then the more you want it. That's cyclical things. But of course, some things on this list we really need. We really need food. We really need some amount. We need to go shopping sometimes. I actually need my phone to, keep up with my emails and be a responsive teacher. So there's many things on this list we need, and dopamine is not a bad thing. In fact, I go to water aerobics regularly, not only because I know it's good for my body, but also because I can love that moment and I can feel it. There's this moment when the dopamine kicks in. And and that I like that. It's very pleasurable. And probably I realize I get another little hit from dopamine when I come home and look at my stats on my Fitbit and see that for some of the time I've exercised in the vigorous zone, which begets me more wanting to exercise in the vigorous zone next time. So I'm fortunate. I'm not hardwired to be a compulsive exerciser. Maybe the opposite, but that pleasure of that dopamine does not lead me to want more and more, more to appreciate it when it comes. But back to the book. Scientists rely on dopamine as a kind of universal currency for measuring the addictive potential of any experience. The more dopamine in the brain's reward pathway, the more addictive the experience. In addition to the discovery of dopamine, one of the most remarkable neuroscientific findings in the past century is that the brain processes pleasure and pain in the same place. Further, pleasure and pain work like opposite sides of a balance. We've all experienced that moment of craving a second piece of chocolate or wanting a good book, video, movie to last forever, that desire for it to last forever. That moment of wanting is the brain's pleasure balance tipped to the side of pain. So there it is. Speaking my own words again, how desire can lead to pain or suffering. So back to the book. This book aims to unpack the neuroscience of reward and in so enable us to live a better, healthier balance between pleasure and pain. But neuroscience is not enough. We also need the lived experience of human beings. Who better to teach us to overcome compulsive over consumption than those who are most vulnerable to it, people with addiction. And she goes on to tell many, she's, oh, by the way, she's a psychiatrist. Her name is Anna Lemke. And she does tell some chilling stories of people who have been addicted beyond something I personally could have imagined. And she says, you'll find some of these stories shocking, but to me, they're just extreme versions of what we are all capable. A philosopher and theologian, Kent Dunnington, wrote, quote, "People with severe addictions are among those contemporary prophets that we ignore to our demise, for they show us who we truly are." That's an interesting statement. I'll go on to maybe have a rebuttal with that. But she says, whether it's sugar or shopping, voyeuring or vaping, social media posts or Washington Post, or the Washington Post, we all engage in behaviors we wish we didn't, or to an extent we regret. And then I found this journal entry. It was just from a few days ago, my own journal entry, which said, quote, "Feeling uplift, is it dopamine? From a feeling the uplift of a good Dharma talk." Yes. And then now I'm writing from the present. Yes, no doubt creativity, there is that creativity of writing Dharma talks and when I feel good about them, not all the time, but other forms of creativity pleasures me, and likely it's about dopamine or dopamine's involved. And certainly certain states in meditation, I'm sure bring dopamine. I've often called meditation my antidepressant. But the sad part is we are hardwired to reach for more and more dopamine. And as we reach for more of it, we have more of a letdown and needing more of what gives us pleasure to feel the same amount of pleasure. I'm talking about addiction. So we do more and more and feel worse and worse. So that's the Dharma teacher expressed through neurology, through the understanding and research on neurology, that desire can poison us. So we can't avoid being exposed to the objects that pleasure us, and we need some dopamine. Dopamine can be a good thing. We need some uplift. But then there's the shame that can accompany engaging in behaviors we wish we hadn't, of being unable to will ourselves to stop, and maybe then hiding because we feel so much shame, or hiding this part. Because underneath it, there's that insidious view that this is because something is wrong with me. We believe we're caught in that hamster wheel of repetitive behaviors because we're weak or bad kind of person, an addictive person. By the way, in this book, they research how rodents actually become addicted to hamster-like wheels. They have all kinds of research with all kinds of rodents. So they become addicted to that going round and round too. So the possibilities of how you might think that there's something wrong with you, that you're a flawed self because of this wanting more, this desire thing, are many. But it all goes back to a view, I believe, about, or at least part of it's about a view of a solid sense of self. And then what follows from that view that there really is this self is that when we're engaged in these addictive compulsive behaviors, that we're bad, that this self is bad. But this book really caught my attention. I think the reason I bought the book is because it reveals something quite different, that certain environments create more desire. You put those rodents out there, you put wheels, they put the research, they put wheels like for wild rodents, and the rodents found the wheels. They changed their environment and then they became addicted to the wheels. So the object of our desire are just so available in our environment. It's not our fault that we seek out more dopamine, more pleasure. It's part of just, well, our mammal, I guess. Well, rodents aren't mammals. Anyway, it's part of our what our built-in conditions, but it is our responsibility to contend with this. You know, if we'd been born in an earlier century, there wouldn't be places to get sugar, you know, on almost, or and alcohol on almost every corner. It would have been harder to get to. So, and then there's the genetic part. Had we been born, some of us with different genetics, it would be easier to curb our desire. But really, the point I want to end with is that we're not at fault for craving and for dopamine, but we not need to find a way to live with these tendencies as skillful as we are able, or put in other words, doing the least harm to ourselves and others.